Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're talking to someone who's taken an unusual career path, which has taken him from childhood roots in Philadelphia to now being the owner and CEO of a call center business in Costa Rica. I am delighted to welcome Richard Blank to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Richard. Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about your background and the journey you've taken?
I most certainly do. And James, I can't thank you enough for having me as a guest on the Learning Effect podcast today. I'm very excited to share ideas with you and your audience. And yeah, I have a nice story to tell. I did start back in Philadelphia and ended up here in Costa Rica. But to your audience, I am the very proud CEO of a very strong call center in Central America, Costa Rica's call center. And maybe today what you and I can do is shatter some stereotypes of what people see in the movies in regards to telemarketing, being a CEO and working in a call center. So I'd be more than happy to, I guess, show you what's in the kitchen and raise the curtains and let you see what really happens here in these sort of businesses.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's really great. And one of the things that I really like about a podcast is bringing real stories to life and you know, shattering some of those myths or preconceptions people might have about whether that's learning or business or even countries or culture. So let's go back way back when, Richard, and think about your career. So talk us through that career journey you've been on and where it's taken you and how you've ended up where you are now.
Well, that's one of my favorite questions, James, in regards to my career. And I guess it was more of preparing for it. When I had graduated high school back in 1991 in Northeast Philadelphia at a place called Abington, most of my friends were deciding to do law and engineering and medicine. And I myself, my favorite class was languages. And I knew that by learning a second language would make me marketable. And I also wanted nicer weather. So I went to the University of Arizona and studied Spanish and communication. But during college, I did an internship for Telemundo. So I got to practice my second language skills and build a resume in regards to promotions and public relations. And at 27, I had a chance to move to Costa Rica. A very good friend of mine owned a call center and asked if I could come down for a couple months to teach English. And, you know, I guess a couple months turned into working with them for 4 years and I decided to stay. It's a bold move, but James, once in a while, you are given a one in a million opportunity. And so you really kind of fall into a call center. And when I was here, I just saw areas in which I could enhance the experience for the agent and for the client. And so that's when I decided to throw my hat in the ring in my mid-30s.
So, you know, like lots of our guests and, you know, myself, I maybe not that structured career path that you would have looked and said when you were 18, 20, that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in my mid-30s in Costa Rica. I'm going to be running a call center. And lots of people sort of have that happenstance career where opportunity comes along and you grasp that. And you, as you said, 2 years became 2 months became 4 years. And then you've decided to stay and progress on that. So that journey in itself is a huge learning journey. So, you know, you've come from into call centers, into a new environment, into new country. You know, what did you pick up and what helped you to survive and be successful and embrace that experience?
Well, James, I guess one of the first things is to be able to leave any sort of baggage that I had behind. I love my family and friends and close circles. And a lot of the times, if you can get past certain sort of guilt, you can live anywhere in the world. So it might have seen as being a little bit selfish or egocentric, because when you're younger, you are given certain opinions and your career should be predestined. You should know what you want to do at 18, but I didn't. And so I guess it was just about being true to myself and following through on what I decided to do as a young man. And so by coming here to Costa Rica, James, and it's an excellent question, it was a lot easier for me. Hey, I knew people here already, but that wasn't the point. I learned the second language and I was very open-minded to other cultures and traditions. And I was letting go the certain things in the United States that we held to such high esteem because it really didn't matter in certain places of the world. And so what I was really trying to do was just show good faith and show who I was as a person And as long as there was positive reinforcement, James, I was able to stay. And, you know, as I mentioned, 2 months turned into 4 years because every day it was just another excellent day and another excellent week to month to year. And the fact that it's been 22 years, obviously, my intuition, my soul, my body knew that this is the right place for me. If not, I would have left a long time ago.
And so you're there established, you're in Costa Rica for 22 years now, Richard, and you're building this business you believe in, you're espousing leadership values you believe in, you're very focused on your people, you're focused on learning, development, engagement. So do you want to share with us some of those beliefs that have come out, you know, from you and from your experience? So let's start with leadership, because we've had some really interesting conversations before. So what's this taught you about leadership, and what are your views about how a leader should show up in their business?
And it's a shame your audience didn't hear our conversations off the air about leadership and what we spoke about, because you and I, my friend, are very, very much on the same page. We believe that leadership starts with empathy, because the fact that I'm an owner of a company, I have leverage. I could hire, fire, make or break somebody, but you and I decide to be wind in their sails, to encourage them, to delegate so we can promote people from within. And so leadership to me is not playing big boss with the title, the office and the parking spot. And you know what you see, they're supposed to be afraid of me. But to me, my friend, if you're not breaking the law, you shouldn't be afraid of a police officer. If you're not cheating on a test, don't be afraid of a teacher. And if you're coming to work and being your best and trying to grow, why would you be afraid of me? I'm the first person here to look for ways to have you grow. And so I think immediately I had to establish not only my credibility by learning their language and moving abroad and doing things in a certain ethical way, but you know, just as a business owner, I wanted to know their name and give them their dignity. Because what I noticed initially, not just in call centers, James, but any industry, a lot of people feel like a number or a robot, or they feel expendable. And if I just went old school and broke bread with people and learned who they were and worked with them, chances are they'd come back tomorrow and continue working with me. Because if nobody comes up, I don't have a business. And so I think it really begins from the core, your foundation, your synergy, your people. And that was very easy for me, is to have that sort of close relationship with the staff that work with here.
And how have people responded to that? Because that's not always the norm, Richard, in every business. So, you know, you're setting that as your way of operating, you're role modeling that behavior, you're taking an interest in your people, you're, as you said, putting the wind in their sails and giving them space to grow and be themselves. So, but how's that been received by people who've come into your business, and how's that sort of grown beyond yourself? Because it can't just live in you, it's got to be within other people to grow as well.
Of course, James. Well, I think everybody, when they've grown up, has had a best friend, has had an excellent teacher, a coach, or even a mentor. And maybe I might be the first one to give them this example in an office environment, in a business environment. I'm not saying that, you know, it's all fun and games here. I do very much believe in a gamification culture where we play pinball and retro arcade machines to let off steam and to recharge batteries. But we were talking about breaking any sort of stereotypes and misconceptions of an owner of a company. As I say before, I can teach them their balance and how to swing and how to use their weight distribution to give the strongest punch. And I can, once again, work with them so they can have more self-reliance and self-confidence, not only on the phone, but off the phone. Maybe, James, a good leader is somebody that can work with you during business hours to reinforce who you are, so when you leave the office, you can conquer any sort of challenges you have, because a lot of the times things outside the office may affect people's performance here. And so I always have to take their private lives, their responsibilities very much into consideration.
And I think that's a really interesting point, Richard, because I remember when I was first going into work 20, 25 years ago, and you know, the mantra of you leave your personal life at the door. you know, you've got your work persona and your personal persona, which I always just thought was nonsense. But, you know, that was sort of the espousal that sometimes we're almost expected to be these different people. And, you know, you're talking about actually that is almost your business, and you can't ignore that, because the whole person comes to work, the whole person leaves work, and we shouldn't be creating fragmented, you know, fake people along the way. So, you know, I think it's a really interesting message that you lead with that, because that's certainly different to what I was told at the start of my career.
It helps, James, if you started from the bottom up. And when I came to my friend's call center, yes, of course, there was momentum there, and I knew the owner, and he was a good friend of mine. But I was not C-level. I wasn't looking at contracts or the finances. I got to sit with thousands of local Costa Rican Ticos in many different departments, in retention, customer support, sales, you know, human resources, training, even the affiliate department for online search engine optimization. And so by sitting with the people and hearing the good and the bad and walking in those shoes, it gives you more empathy and more understanding for somebody that is making hundreds of phone calls a day, month after month, in this sort of structured environment. And so the best leaders were the best soldiers. And they're the ones that are capable of rolling up their sleeves, jumping on a phone call at any time, and not, you know, schooling the agent, but letting them know that, hey, the reason I'm in this position is because I mastered that level. And I was able to do it mentally, physically, and physiologically. And I believe in good diets and good sleep cycles. If people are capable of any sort of meditation to find their balance, I think that's great. And if somebody just needs a timeout, James, just to, even though it's not their scheduled break, but if someone gets off of a difficult call or even has a victorious call, why don't we just take a couple minutes to take that moment to either expand upon it or to fix it? And so it's a very delicate thing, because these are speakers that are earning a living speaking and trying to use extremely active listening, because they're translating while they're doing their job. And so these are pretty intense short periods of time that they need to be almost working double. And so I'm not trying to squeeze as much as I can out of them. There is a very good sweet spot and a certain rhythm and pace that they can get. But since you and I have walked in those shoes, my friend, it's very easy for us to spot things prior, so we can do more of a prevention instead of a cure. And you know what happens then when someone just has a bad day? They could quit, they could break down, they could say things they regret. And so we just try to avoid any sort of situations like that.
No, I think that's really, you know, that approach, but also understanding that context. You know, you've shared a few bits just in there about the context, Richard. So you've talked about the fact that they're operating in a second language, they're translating, they're also in a call center environment and active listening. So just without making any assumptions for our listeners, it'd be great just for you to set that context so that people understand a bit more about your business and what you operate within, so that people can understand the challenges and opportunities and the unique skill sets and, you know, motivation sets and everything else that need to exist within that environment, because not everyone's worked in a call center, not everyone's worked in a second language environment, etc. So it'd be great just for you to bring a bit of color to that and explain almost how that business works.
It would be my pleasure. Thank you. There's a lot of people that do make and receive phone calls for their companies. So really what a call center does is just gives you much more infrastructure, and there's an organization behind it. Like I can give you a couple examples. Since COVID hit and people have to work from home, one of the disadvantages we have is the fact that they may not have internet redundancy. There might be an electricity issue and they don't have immediate IT support. And so when you have a brick and mortar building, you are guaranteeing, once again, internet always being up, a backup generator and an IT staff that can put you on a turnkey station or fix whatever's happening. And so a lot of companies need to have that real-time assistance in order to run their business. That's why they may use us. And also, I believe that today, a lot of companies are focusing on omni-channel non-voice support. So you'll be filling out forms or speaking, you know, in chat. And that's fine, it works for the business. But to me, I believe that when you speak with a client, you have many opportunities. And the most important one is retention. You could also upsell them, could get a referral. And let's just look at it in a mature way. Worst case scenario, you're going to lose the account. Maybe from an exit interview, this individual could tell you areas in which you could improve and earn their business, or what the competition has done in order to gain their trust. And so by eliminating any sort of interpersonal communication, once again, it is numbing certain skills. But let's just say someone walks into a call center. What we have here is a lot of the times, if you're making outbound calls, people could be put on a predictive dialer, which means that it could be automatically dialing multiple lines for you at the same time. So really, when you are in a ready status, all you're doing is speaking to people that are picking up. And so the productivity level goes through the roof. There's also ways to disposition a phone call. So you can quickly see how many 200, 300, 400 calls a day, how the list is and how the agent is performing. We study things here like talk time and wrap up time and the CRM system where people have to input information. It's very easy to learn how to use a CRM and a phone system. That just takes an hour. What I'm looking for somebody to do is to have these additional soft skills. James, you could pass our quality assurance department where we grade your phone calls on KPIs and we can study your metrics to make sure you're doing your job. But James, you'll never be an ace if you don't do real good active listening and repeating the client's name and using your pronouns and a lot of times doing confirmation questions for just checkpoints. As long as you're not hedging by just saying, I'm okay, and you're really giving sincere answers to people and allowing them to explain things in detail with open-ended questions, these individuals will reduce any sort of bad habits. New agents we can mold, get them up to speed. And if you're talented on the phone, James, you can pretty much earn more than most vocations, and their earnings potential is limitless. And so when somebody comes into the center, I make sure that they have all the resources. I onboard them properly. I expand their vocabulary with a thesaurus so they can learn similes and be more diplomatic on the phone. And these are the sort of things that give the agent much more job fulfillment. So they're stimulated, so they're not bored, and they're just looking for ways to improve.
And I think, Richard, what struck me on our last conversation is that effort you put into the tools and techniques and to shaping that full, like you mentioned, the thesaurus. But there were a number of things you talked through, and I was just there thinking, I've not heard that level of thoughtfulness and that level of rigor almost in looking at the profession and thinking about all the things that you can do to enrich that employee, to help them to, as you said, not be bored, but also achieve that earning potential or achieve their potential. So I would love to know some more about those techniques and the tools that you furnish your team with and that you advocate.
Absolutely. Let's just say that somebody is making an outbound prospecting call to a company. And let's say, for an example, I'm calling in the Learning Effect. James, is there somebody there that answers the phone for you at your company? Do you have an assistant that works with you?
There is not. There is me and there is my business partner. So you get one of us. So no, we don't have anyone.
What is your business partner's name?
Katie.
Casey. Let's say I call the Learning Effect and Casey answers the phone. The first thing that I would suggest for somebody is to do a company name spike, or I would ask how the Learning Effect is doing today, not how Casey's doing today. So I can use my anonymity initially, and I can say the name of your company better than Casey does. And then Casey's going to be excited to speak with me and will usually ask me the first question, what is your name? I believe that questions can be done in a buffer boomerang technique. A lot of the times, even though Casey, I'm sure, is very positive, there are certain times people can ask you a question in a negative tone. So what you do is you buffer the negative tone, you do a name drop, Casey, and you say, that is an excellent question. You repeat the question to show active listening. My name is. And then you answer it in a +2, Richard Blank. And so that's an excellent way, once again, to show active listening, to reset the tone, and to move things forward in a momentum. Every conversation has an introduction, body, and conclusion. And I believe that the average attention span is 30 seconds to 2 minutes. So after, once again, doing a company name spike, answering the first question for Casey, Casey likes me, and then I'm asking to speak to James, I'm going to get transferred to James. Before the transferred call, I'll let Casey know that I'm going to give a positive escalation. to let James know how helpful Casey was. And of course, Casey's going to want to transfer the call. So now I'm speaking with James. And once again, I'm using my anonymity, not for the whole call, because that's shady. But the first thing I would say is, James, I just got to let you know Casey's the most incredible person you work with. And so you would say, thank you very much. With whom am I speaking? Once again, it's a buffer boomerang. James, I'm so glad that you asked. My name is Richard Blank. And then we start talking. And then James asked me a second question. Richard, what do you do? And what I would like to do is to explain to you the services that we offer. But a lot of the times, James, people will start doing desert pitching, where they just speak without any sort of oasis for resting and for drinking. And so if anybody gives a list of stuff that you offer, you should pause just like a dessert tray to see if there's a positive or a negative reinforcement. And so from taking it to a horizontal, then you take it to a vertical, because after I give you my entire list, at the end, I could be brazen enough to say, hey, James, I'm sure you like at least one. So you choose the first one, and then we start asking you open-ended questions. So then in the middle of the phone call, and one of my fortes is phonetic micro-expression reading, because on the phone, you're losing three of your senses, your taste, touch, and smell. Scientists claim that if you lose a sense, your other should be expanded. So I believe you should be doing some severe active listening and using image streaming for your metaphysics, for how you see people, because imagination is better than a book. Your tone should be consistent. It should be empathetic and confident. That's fine. You should mirror image somebody's rate of speech and how loud they speak, because every 30 seconds to 2 minutes, they could do a spike or a dip. That's usually when I ask a tie-down question if something makes sense or sounds good. But mind you, you could always manipulate your tone, rate, pitch, and duration. So my opinion, the answering speed, which is kind of funny because phonetics is the sound of speech, but I'm letting you know during a conversation, the silence actually gives you more of a tell sign than the sound itself. And that's something that's done subconsciously, so it can't be really controlled. And so if it's not in sync, then that's usually the time someone could be facetious with you and you would ask for more of a, you know, clarifying question. And then another soft skill that I like to do is if there's a dog barking on the phone, because a lot of the times you're calling people's homes and there's a Me Too technique. I'd let you know, James, how much I love dogs, which is obviously I can hear your dog. I'll ask you the follow-up question, the dog's name, and you'll say Fluffy, and I'll say Fluffy sounds great. So inadvertently and passive-aggressively, I'm letting you know to put the dog outside. And then when you come back to the call, that's usually when I anchor you. We'll talk about your dog for a couple minutes, and that's usually when you say, excuse me, what is your name again? James, I'm so glad that you asked. Once again, my name is Richard Blank. And that's when you name drop me for the rest of the call. And so then finally, we get to the end of the call, and so I'll say, James, since you have me on the phone today, are there any other final questions you have? I remember you said you liked A, but we did speak about B, D, and E. I like E. There we go again. We're going to stack those open-ended questions. I usually finish a phone call by confirming your information in military alphabet, because we'll talk about how proud we are of the military, and that's kind of cool, and it's very concise. Then I will, in writing, when I follow up with you, let you know how amazing Casey was. So when I call your company back, the Richard Circle gets into play. Casey remembers me, thanks me so much for that written and verbal positive escalation, and can't help but give me more of your company culture, and then all of a sudden transfer me to James. And so I think those are the sort of things, my friend, that will not compromise anyone's ethics, values, and morals, will give someone a structured phone call, but a little bit of, I guess, a little bit of a special sauce. You're just not trying to angle your way to speak to James, or you're just plastic. You know, you're too well rehearsed, you're too commercialized. You really still need to be raw, kind of like a painting. And by showing that active listening and asking those follow-up questions, your audience will really be making a lot of friends from strangers. And their numbers are going to go through the roof. And they'll be very surprised when they're not just earning more money, but getting a lot of referrals from that. So that, my friend, is my special sauce on how to make certain phone calls.
Okay, so Richard, you've taken us through a number of techniques there, you know, your boomerang buffer and everything else, but you've got, and you sort of ended that by talking about people needing to be raw. So it's not robotic, but they've got those techniques that they've molded into themselves. So they're applying those techniques with their own special sauce, so to say, you know, so that their personality comes through, and it's not this robotic or very commercial sales call that I'm getting. It's something that is containing that active listening, containing that interest, the personalization and everything else you've talked about. How do you support your team to, you know, firstly understand that and learn that, and then reinforce that throughout the business? Because as you've also mentioned earlier, you've talked about sometimes we don't have a good day, sometimes, you know, things go awry, etc. So what's your support mechanism within your call center and within your business to keep that team performing, focused, happy, engaged, and everything else that comes together to keep them where you need them to be and where they need to be?
It's a wonderful question. To continue to support them is from their own self-improvement. And so by having a quality control department, we have their recordings. It's them. It's a mirror. You can't spin it. That's what you have. And so when we listen to these calls with the agents, a lot of the times I don't have to say anything. They'll look at me, I'll look back at them, and they go, I know, Richard, I forgot to do the positive escalation for Casey. I forgot to repeat the buffer boomerang. And if it gets to a certain level where they're having a really bad day, you know, even though I'm a guest in this country, James, I will do a little bit of Philly guilt on them. I'll say, James, you know you're better than that. Come on, look what you did last Tuesday when you got me 20 leads. Or I'll say, James, this is out of character for you today. You're not the kind of guy that slams down a phone or, you know, or makes faces. You're usually the guy standing up and high-fiving everybody. Are you doing all right, pal? You want to put some water on your face or a little bit of coffee or some cookies or something? And so, as I say before, these are artists of speech, and they're just not going through the motions. They have to be fully engaged in order to be successful. And sometimes it's just a simple realignment. I'm kind of superstitious where if someone's acting a little funky or the last phone call was weird, I say, wait a minute, because you would have been making a phone call. Wait one more minute and then reset yourself, because it could be another line of time. You know, you're off by a minute. And so let's do the odds instead of the evens. And, you know, why not? But a lot of the times when they come into the call center, and you brought up something great, it could be a psychological thing. Besides filling out their resume and giving me all their qualifications, I do ask them to turn the paper over and give me a couple paragraphs of a coming of age moment. And then I have to explain what a coming of age moment is, when they beat up a bully or save a kitten from a tree. Besides grading their grammar and vocabulary and sentence structure, James, I get to learn about a certain time of their life when they won and when they were on top. And so you're mentioning about a day when they're off. I could also remind them of a couple years ago, you shared a story with me when the odds were against you and you came out ahead. And so I almost have to remind them of what got them to where they are today, by learning a second language, by having these responsibilities for their families at their homes. Sometimes these young men and women pay rent and medicine, and so that catches up with them. And so, you know, I guess it grounds them. It can remind them, because life, you can get caught up in so many different things. And what's interesting is somebody could be sitting next to you physically, but their mind is elsewhere. And I'm not telling you to be super duper focused all day long, but, you know, you're sitting on the phone for 2 hour stints. You do 2 hours a break, 2 hours lunch, and then, you know, that's how your day works on a 9 hour shift. And so, like a boxer, the moment that you lose your concentration and drop your guard, you're getting knocked out. Same thing with an ace pilot. You don't pay attention, you're hitting a mountainside. And so while these people are in surgery, flying these planes, and they're in the ring, they need to be fully, fully, fully focused the entire time. And then when you're in the corner, when you're grounded and you're relaxing, that's when you can let your mind wander. But to be a true professional, James, is sometimes being able to separate the two. And it's easier said than done. But if you can put photographs in your desk, if you can nickname yourself to remind you of being the champ, if you could have a buddy that sits next to you that you could feed off of their energy, or get some sort of reinforcement, I encourage things like that. And so it's not just cookie cutter, James. There's so many ways to assist somebody in so many shapes and sizes, and I'm open-minded to try all of them, as long as somebody just doesn't spiral and start having bad habits and taking the easy way out. Quitting, drinking, cursing, you know, zoning out. No, take the tough way, the way that our great-grandparents did. You know, the grit and having a strong back and a strong chin. And those are the sort of things that we try to instill here.
And I like that, you know, the resilience through and focusing on not the easy path of quitting, but the difficult path of facing those challenges. And also, you know, you're talking back to that when you've initially recruited people and you're looking at wanting to know when they've won. I think that's a really nice message of, you know, focusing and helping bring people back to what they can achieve and they can overcome adversity. Now, for our listeners, they won't be able to see what I can see behind you, but I'm sat looking behind you and I've, you know, I can see a jukebox and the candy machine behind you. And I know we've talked in the past about gamification and how, you know, whether that's pinballs in the call center or whatever, but talk us through gamification and what that means for you and how you, you know, positively apply that within the workplace or bring that sort of passion you have into work.
How cool were the arcades in the United Kingdom? Please tell me you guys had the greatest arcades back in the day.
We did back when I was a kid, and you can still find some arcades at the seaside, but they're a bit of a dying breed, yeah.
But you do remember putting your coin up on the marquee and waiting to play that new game that came in, and it was a healthy place to hang out. You know, you weren't getting in trouble on the street. And so when I grew up, my $5 had to last me a whole day, so I had to be pretty good at some of these games. And today, with the plethora of systems, consoles, and games that are out there, I mean, 100 games are created a day. And with Xbox and PlayStation and the games on your phone, I think it's incredible. But I also remember the time you could put in a quarter and have like one or two buttons and a joystick, and next thing you know, you're playing a game. And I like things with that sort of simplicity. But for me, I guess I always wanted it. It's still keeping me young. And in Costa Rica, pastime became an obsession. And a lot of these, as you were mentioning, amazing arcades that are going out of business, some of these machines are just collecting dust somewhere. And James, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And that jukebox that you see behind me, and unfortunately your audience can't see it, she's a beautiful 1961 Ricola Regis. And it was just sitting in some guy's bodega for decades. And when I showed up, sure, it needed a little TLC, but you can see the value in it. And the keys are in good condition, and the glass and the outside and the chrome. And just one by one, I just started collecting. And I'm a married man, and I know how it is to make a happy wife. And I hate to say it, this is the one hill that I'm willing to die on, and my wife knows this. So as long as she wins 99% of the time, she does allow me to collect my games because, A, we have the space at home and at work. And as I mentioned, over the years, I've been grabbing pinball machines and retro arcade machines, an air hockey table, a ski machine, and I got a couple electricians down here that assist me in fixing them. And there's companies in the United States and in Australia and Europe where you can order certain parts to fix them. And these machines are older than the agents. And like Elton John's Pinball Wizard, he was spot on. I mean, you really become one with a machine. And as much as people try to convince me that virtual pinball is amazing, there is a huge difference between doing things over the internet and live. And when you're in the game room with your jefe, and you're playing a game, and as I mentioned before, making friends in other departments and letting off steam and just not having a cigarette outside. And I've created that sort of neutral environment. And you're gonna love this. My favorite class in school was recess. And so when we have training classes, usually before they start learning anything, the 10 or 15 agents are in the game room meeting each other and cooling out. So when they come into the training room, they're not just absorbing, they're more contributing because of their comfort levels. And I guess that's just for me. I wanted to let you know you could work hard and play hard, and that I am a Generation X, and that we loved our video games and pinball machines. And since I am an owner of a company, I am at liberty to use my space the way I want to, and a portion of my space has to be filled with these amazing machines.
And I think having that passion that comes from you and bringing that into your business. Now, and I'm really interested to know how many people, you know, you said people are in that games room, people are engaging. It's become part of the company culture. But has anyone else almost picked up that passion? Have, you know, is this begun spread beyond you, or is this Richard's hobby that's part of the business, or is this now something that's part of the business and beyond you?
I've seen my agents improve their skills where they're trapping the ball and hitting certain targets and putting up high scores. So obviously they're investing the time. And once again, it gives a wonderful environment to really compete against the boss. And if you win, it's a real win. I'm not going to let you win in golf, you know. And I guess the most fun is this Alpine Racer 2 skiing machine that I picked up, because in Costa Rica, we don't have snow. So a lot of them get to do it virtually, and that's a lot of fun. But I guess what it really does is, as I'm saying before, when you walk into an office environment for the first time, it's usually very uncomfortable furniture, boring magazines, and very intimidating. But with me, it's almost like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. You're walking through the chocolate river and everything you could eat. So before going upstairs, you are walking through a wonderfully exciting, fun environment. And that shows you how you're treated and how I feel about you without even saying anything. And when my clients come and visit me, they realize that A, they don't have a game room, B, that's how I treat myself and how I treat the agents. And my clients like the fact that their staff has that sort of environment. And finally, I guess it just makes us look cool. Because, you know, I can't compete against Amazon and some of these larger centers that, you know, can crush me in regards to their size and strength. But maybe Jeff Bezos didn't play pinball with his agents, but I did. And so if anything or nothing, I get one gold medal. So that's kind of where I could see it that way. So a lot of people say, Richard, that's amazing. Not only do you know my name, but you're the only boss ever that's probably going to play pinball with me. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I think you've given us a real flavor for that secret sauce of both your approach, but also some of your business approach. And as you've said, you're, you know, can't necessarily compete against the big boys in terms of size, but you've got this real USP running through that comes from you. So where does that go next? What's next on the horizon for you? What's, you know, what are you looking forward to? What's the focus going forward for Richard and your business?
Thank you, James. I guess going forward is how many more people that I can promote. And as I grow, how many more families can I feed? And so my main goal initially was being a giver, because I had no idea what to expect moving to Costa Rica 22 years ago. So being a guest in this country every day to me is a gift, and it makes you very humble. So to try to give that sort of projection to me is difficult. I mean, any sort of business has their uncertainty. Maybe I guess one more thing I'll be doing is saving more money to weather any sort of storms in the future and to ensure job stability. But I get a real kick out of seeing people grow, and especially new agents, even though I'm not making them a supervisor in the first day. But if they show up on time, pen at the ready, they're participating, they're excited, they're not afraid of their boss, where they actually say good morning to me. And I know that I have a seed that could grow. And I know that with proper guidance, this individual could really shine. And when I see people standing on the floor and pacing when talking, obviously they're having a breakthrough. When somebody knocks on my door to say, Richard, I have a suggestion on a script, I'm almost speechless, because this is an individual that's going above and beyond. And I guess finally, James, if somebody is doing dedicated practice, including myself, things that we do off the camera and outside of work, if I'm improving and other people are improving, then it shows collectively we're supporting one another as well. Once again, it's these individual daily wins that people have. If it's just making your bed in the morning, to working out, to returning phone calls and emails before the end of business that day, to having a good diet, to calling your friends and family. I mean, just having those small wins, those things will add up for your balance. And then if you are complete, then James, you're capable of expanding and thinking of others.
No, I think there's been some absolutely great insights, Richard. And I've, you know, really, you know, got another layer to you. You know, I've got to understand more than our last conversation, and I'm sure our listeners have got a great insight into you and, you know, what you're working for, what your mission is, you know, the support. There's lots and lots of layers of things you've talked about. And again, often for people, they don't see the difference in themselves. But for me, when I talk to you, I see a slightly different mindset to a lot of the business leaders out there. So for those people who are listening into the podcast and are thinking, actually, Richard Blank, someone I want to know a bit more about, or I want to follow the story, or I just want to test some ideas out and see what you're doing, or find more about your business, what's the best way of them doing that?
To grab a first class plane ticket and fly down and come visit me. That's the best thing to do. But you could always give me a call at 888-271-6750. Send me an email, CEO@CostaRicasCallCenter.com. And my friend James, I have a Facebook page, a fan page of about 98,000 Costa Ricans there. And they're can't wait to meet you and the learning effect. And you're going to get a ton of new fans. And if your audience is interested in seeing what the pulse of the business process outsourcing industry is in Costa Rica, definitely go to that page. Costa Rica is interesting. We're north of Panama, south of Nicaragua. We're the only democratic society in Central America. There's no standing army, so they put all of their money back into education, so there's a 95% literacy rate. We have an excellent infrastructure, and our ecotourism is one of the best in the world. And so it's very attractive not only to live here and do business here, but to, once again, support Costa Rica. And companies you'll find this interesting, such as Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle are here. So yes, you and I do compete against the big boys, but once again, they have enough confidence in this beautiful Central American country to invest. And so I am looking forward to our second podcast when you come and visit me and we do this on site. That'll be a lot of fun. Or if you want, we can do it at the beach. You let me know what you want to do.
As I've said to you before, I love Central America and I would be there in a heartbeat. So yeah, absolutely. When I can get across to Costa Rica, I will be there and looking forward to doing episode two.
Excellent, James. You're a good man and I really like your work. And before we even touch base, I let you know that the learning effect, it not only got my attention, but you inspired me enough to write you. And our first phone call was amazing. And here we are today. And I think what we're really trying to do is just put wind into each other's sails and support each other's efforts. And I'm really much looking forward to not only your growth, but once again, our friendship and where this is going.
Brilliant, Richard. And thank you very much for your time today. And I know you're going to inspire lots of our listeners as well.
Cheers, my friend.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the learning effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.